This week on It's So Bad, we get a bad case of the scourge in space.
Chris, that was good. Thank you for that intro.
Michael, hello.
Welcome to the podcast. We are podcasting this week. We are talking about a game called Scourge Hive. We're adding it to our endless list of games, which is a game that is currently 87 entries long. Last week, we added Shaq Fu to our endless list as our 86th entry. We currently have 87 games. Goes from Super Mario 64 all the way down to Jurassic Park Trespasser. Really hoping to put Shaq Fu as our last game, but it didn't happen last week.
No, Shaq held him off. So that, you know, that's a missed movie opportunity right there for Shaq in the 90s, fighting off raptors and another Jurassic beast. That should have been in Shaq Fu. Instantly just made Shaq Fu a better game. Spitballing right there.
I mean, Shaq Fu would have been better if it was anything but a fighting game. So, and it was a fighting game. So. I never want to talk about that game again. So let's move on to Scourge Hive, which was your pick. How did you come up with this game?
So you can correct me if I'm wrong, this is our first GBA and DS game, right? For our endless list?
I believe so. I'm pretty sure.
Definitely, yes. At least the first GBA game anyway. So
I don't even think we have a Game Boy game on our list, which is really sad.
Oh,
we have Sega Master System, SNES, Genesis, Xbox, Xbox 360. Yeah, I don't see any Game Boy games.
Well, we really, really swung for the fences with that first Nintendo handheld game. But so this is a game that I just learned about in the last probably last year or so, and I never had a GBA. Back in the day, but I have like a fat DS that could play GBA games and DS games. And I was trying to look for some kind of like hidden gem Game Boy Advance games. And a lot of stuff I found on various websites and, you know, a lot of like random like YouTube videos, people talking about like random GBA hidden gems. Like they frequently would mention this game, and it seemed kind of cool to me because I was trying to like, I like Metroid influence games. Like, I'm not saying this is, plays like Metroid per se, but like that
they really
sci-fi
they really
style,
yeah,
like that story and space, like conceptually I feel like it well, not feel like it, definitely does pull a lot from Metroid. And
yeah, they lay on the Metroid influence quite heavily in this game.
yes, which I'm sure we will discuss in quite detail. But so I mean, it just seemed like on these hidden gem games that are lists, It just seemed like a cool game to me, and I grabbed it, and I thought it would be an interesting game to talk about. Because, I mean, I think this is a very under-the-radar game, which I'm sure when we get to the background, we'll kind of see why. But yeah. So, yeah, that was it.
So it's a 2D isometric kind of Metroidvania game. I guess it is a Metroidvania game. Action-oriented, like action RPG mechanics in there as well. You get experience, you level up, you get more health when you level and when you kill more bad guys. You get weapons that help you deal with the enemies depending upon their type. Better, and you get better equipped to handle them. You get weapons or items that help you traverse areas, kind of why it's kind of a Metroidvania-y thing that opens paths for you. But the big thing that this game does different from Metroid games, as I mentioned at the very start, is that it's isometric. So you're looking down at an angle at somebody who very much looks like Zero Suit Samus. Very much.
Right, so your character, like Samus, is a bounty hunter.
looks like Samus, and also is a bounty hunter.
Listen, Samus does not
in outer space.
Samus does not have the ponytail game that Genosa Amra, who is your character that you play as, has in this game. So, you know, I was kind of hoping that large, large ponytail in your character would ultimately be used as like some sort of whip, like as a weapon at some point, but it wasn't. It's just very flashy and decorative.
It reminds me of Shantae. You ever play the Shantae games?
No. No.
Oh, yeah, it looks very much like Shantae. Shantae's actually pretty good games. They are very fun. So should check those out. This game kind of reminds me of that for some reason. I think it might be the art style. The art style in this game is like a cutesy 16-bit kind of thing that is pretty good. I enjoyed the art style in this game a lot more than a lot of the other aspects of this game.
So I guess maybe pivoting from that, should we kind of give a little bit of a background to this game's creation?
Sure, go for it.
So starting with the basic premise of the game, right? Like we said, you very much like Samus, you play as a bounty hunter named Genosa Arma, who is a bounty hunter who has been hired by the military. I was a little unclear who the military is actually part of. I'm assuming it's Earth, but whatever. You know, you've been hired by the military to go on a kind of like an intel recovery salvage mission at a lab known as Research Lab 58. And essentially, they had been overrun by this game's stand-in for the Metroids, the Scourge. And they have taken over robots, they've taken over like other alien creatures, and through the course of that, which we'll talk about more, through the course of this mission, Genosa herself becomes infected. But she's wearing a suit, which makes her look a little bit like Samus Aran, who keeps the infection at bay. And the tension from this game, and the gimmick that I thought was kind of interesting that we'll talk about, was that you are constantly staving off an infection rate. And you are running from save point to save point to essentially take that infection rate down. So, like you said, this has kind of like a cutesy pixel art style. It was released for the GBA on Halloween 2006 and came out one day later for the DS. And you played the DS version, right?
Yeah, and you played the GBA version, right?
I did. So, we talked a little about this like offline. Like, I was reading and like various reviews from the time, like I was kind of going back and forth as to which version to get. Like, a lot of reviews said that like there were graphical differences between the GBA and the DS one. The DS one actually being a step backwards, what most of the reviews said, saying that like there was enemy animations missing and some of the graphical effects. I kind of noticed that when I watched like gameplay videos on YouTube, but obviously that, you know, you can only put so much stock in that with frame rate issues and whatnot. But talking with you, it sounds like you didn't really experience those issues.
No, I was trying to like look at GBA gameplay footage when mm-hmm. you said that, and I think it looks a little bit better on the GBA, and I think that's just probably an effect of the screen and the size of the screen, because I think they probably stretched it out a bit to be on the DS. But the effects that they said were missing, I don't understand what they mean, because I think you told me at one point like the splatter effects that shoot out of the screen when you kill things are missing, but they're in my DS copy. I don't miss that. I think the one thing that I noticed in reviews that people touched on that I found to be missing in the DS version is the sound is a lot different in the DS version. Like like the GBA one sounds a lot better than the DS version. But the DS version does have the map on the bottom screen, which
right, that's makes a nice quality of life improvement right there.
Right. And I don't think it, like, the differences as described by people in reviews versus what I played and what I've seen on the YouTube clips mm-hmm. are like that astronomical to recommend one version over the other.
Yeah, I agree. And I think for as much as you will be switching between the map and as much as you'll be switching to the map to find your place, you might want the DS version.
But, yeah, absolutely.
But moving on. So this was a game that was developed by Orbital Media, who no longer exists. They kind of ceased to exist around 2014. They didn't
have a really stellar track record. What are these games? Racing, yeah. Gears Advance?
Canceled.
What's Juka and Monophonic Menace?
So Juka and the Monophonic Menace, I looked into all these games, and Juka and the Monophonic Menace, there we go, came out a year before. And when you look at it, you can tell a lot of assets from that game were lifted and used in Scourge. So it's another isometric view game, but it has a little bit more of like an alchemy type skin to it. But you can tell like a lot of the terrain has kind of been like recolored. From what I looked at, I didn't see like enemy sprites being reused or anything like that. But like there's a aspect of this game where Genosa has to grab some like locking mechanisms and you have to move them to a pad to unlock like a door like in the room. Well, those like pads and some of those locking mechanisms were lifted from Juka and just recolored. But that's supposed to play a little bit more like a fantasy style action adventure game. And then, you know, so then Scourge comes out, you know, and then after that they went on to develop Sally's Spa, which like I looked at that seemed like you'd probably like that because it looks like it's just a clone of Kim Kardashian's Hollywood or whatever that game was you played.
Hey, that game is Kim Kardashian's Hollywood is not bad. I'll say that.
Members of the team, they went on to it. You know, like once Orbital Media dissolved, members of the team like looks like they went on to work on PC and Mac ports of Clue. Let's see, what's his first name? The artist, though, because you pointed out the pixel art. So Sean Dunkley he's credited as being the artist and also with the script in this game. He still appears to be a prolific independent pixel artist. If you check him out on Twitter, he has a lot of a lot of cool commission work. It looks like he's doing for people up there, but. Probably the success story of this, I shouldn't say that, they're probably all very successful, but I would say the most notable alum from Scourge has to be Jay Kaufman. And,
I'm looking at his credits. He's in like everything. He's done so many, he's composed music for so many different games. Shantae, and he was the composer for Shovel Knight too.
Right, remember I said that. I said to you offline. He's the Shovel Knight composer.
The funny thing about this is that I was the way I played this game, because we are in the middle of a pandemic and everybody's at home, and I have a 2-year-old who I'm home with all the time who takes naps. So I played this game when he was napping, and he naps for about 2 to 2.5 hours every day. So I would get in a fair amount of gameplay because this is like a 10-hour game. When he napped, and typically I don't put in my headphones, so I didn't listen to any of the music. But then when I was going online and watching YouTube clips of like the GBA version versus the DS version, I was like, holy shit, this music's great.
Yeah, so like especially later in the game, there's one part of the game which I want to come back to, is that we are kind of traversing through a jungle. Or a jungle type area, swampy type jungle area, and the music in that particular part is excellent, and especially the end game. Like so much of the music in like the last quarter of the game is just really top notch. I would say the music is one of the coolest aspects of this game.
Yeah, the music and the art's really great. It's just the gameplay for me was really tough. So my gripes with the gameplay are a couple things, and we'll just to start with the weapons. So generally in like a Metroid game, if you want to compare this to a Metroid game or really any Metroidvania game, when you get weapons, they're different. So they do different things where you can interact with enemies in different ways, and you can kind of maybe solve some environmental puzzles with the weapons in different ways. This game, the vast majority of the weapons are just the same gun, but it makes you do more damage to certain types of enemies. So if it's an energy enemy, you can do, or a like earth-based enemy, you can do more damage to them depending upon the gun you have equipped. And I found it to be tedious and cumbersome to change the weapons every time you're entering a room with three different types of enemies, just so that you could get more damage on them with these particular types of weapons.
Right. So that, I think that's kind of going to kind of be the story of this game for people, that the, and for us as well, like there's a lot of either you love it or you hate it type aspects of this game. So yeah. Like you said, it's almost like a rock, paper, scissors type bullet mechanic, right? So like, and that's what this game does. Like you kind of touched on it there. Like you come into a room, it's like that room is filled with enemies who are weak to your energy attacks or enemies who are weak to your fire attacks. And I think, and to clarify too, like if you shoot an enemy with a wrong, bullet type, blaster type, whatever, you actually buff their stats and power them up and make them faster and make them deal more damage. So you have to get the right, you have to attack them with like the right weapon. And they throw everybody at you at once.
Right. That's the big problem, right? So if you entered a room and it was the same enemy type throughout the entire room, or if the rooms were big enough where you'd have like one area that was one type and then there was another area that was another type, I think that would be fine, but a lot of the times they're just throwing every different type at you, and they're overlapping, and they're all coming at you at the same time, so you have to, like, tactically move around to hit the right one, or else you're buffing the other one. Although, a lot of the time, I didn't have a lot of tension of dying in this game, either, because I felt like I don't know if I was just taking so long finding key cards or whatever, but I had enough health generally to survive. I think the most tension I felt was from the infection rate. So you, as you walk through an area, you gather more infection, and if you get over 100, then your life starts to drain. So
right, so there was good thing about that is that, playing this game, I always kind of felt like that I could play it in spurts like you were doing, because I was like, well, I was like, I mean, like, you know, you hit that 100% infection rate after about like probably like 6-7 minutes of like real time gameplay. So you could always kind of feel comfortable knowing that like a save point was always like within like 5 minutes away. And yeah. I was like, oh, that's great. I was like, if I have like 30 minutes, I can get through a section and, don't have to worry about, not be going on a long stretch without being able to save.
I think the map design is pretty good in this game, where they give you enough save points. I would say that in rooms, kind of the level design and the environment design of the actual spaces within that map, it can be annoying. because they put two different or three different types of enemies on top of each other, and then there's platforming challenges, and one of the things that this game does is it gives you a grapple beam, and the grapple beam for me was just like my breaking point a lot of the times, because you have to hit the left bumper, I think it was, to throw out the grapple and then jump onto a platform. Right. A lot of the times you can't even see the platform that you're supposed to land on. And then eventually you get a double jump, but that doesn't really help that much if you're doing the like run backwards and grapple your way over another area a lot, because it's just, you can't see where you're going, and it's hard to judge how fast you should go. And then if you add on top of that the isometric perspective, it's just a clusterfuck. It's so hard to judge where you're gonna land and where you're going to go. And it just makes it so, so frustrating.
Yeah. I'll say, like, I overall had I did actually have a lot more fun with this game than I expected to. And I think probably more than most people did, but you kind of mentioned touching on the level design. I think in the beginning of the game, I think the level design is really good, but I think when you get to that swampy forest area, all those problems you just described, I think fly to the forefront, right? Cause it's like, not only do you have to make these tether jumps where you can't necessarily see where you're landing while you're being swarmed by enemies, there's also like this big like fog effect in the room, and I felt like that chunk of the game, which is unfortunately one of the longest chunks of the game, is it's really difficult to navigate where you're at. And like, you've touched on key cards, like one of the big things in this game is that, like, to progress to certain areas, you might have to find 3 key cards or 6 key cards. I think towards the end of the game, at one point, you have to find 9 key cards. And it's like, it sometimes becomes very difficult to, like, figure out where you're going in a room and, like, where you can access and what you can't access. And that's the biggest flaw.
It becomes tedious. I don't understand from a design perspective. They put on the map, they put the things that you need to put into place to progress. So there's like these like 6 things around a level that are more, or I think they're, I forget, it's like 6 to 8 things that you need to put into their spots throughout a map. They put them on the map. They put where they are and what rooms they are.
Right.
And they also put like where the save spots are on the map. Even right when you get to an area, they're like, here's where the save spots are. Here's where the things you need to put in the hole are. And then they also put, here's eventually when you're walking through an area, they're like, okay, so in a couple rooms, there's going to be a weapon upgrade in this room. So go check it out. But they don't put key cards, and they're so abundant in this game that it's like, what? Why? Why aren't you putting key cards on the map?
Right.
And that, so I ended up going through the mind level, which is like, I think it's 4 or 5 stories. And I went through it like 10 times trying to find key cards, and I could never find the fucking key cards. And I was missing 1 key card to figure it out. And it just broke me. I was like, this sucks.
Yeah. That's the unfortunate thing about this game is that.
Yeah. The key cards was finding them was infuriating.
Because the only indicator you have that you're in a room with a key card is that there's a beeping noise to let you know that there's a key card somewhere in that room. And I think it's the same level. It's like that. Yeah, it's the 5th chapter, which is the penultimate chapter. And it's yeah, there was 1 key card I couldn't find. And like, I must have backtracked through that level for so long. And then finally I came into a room that like I had thought I had been in before, but I guess I hadn't. And I heard the beeping and I was like, oh God, it's somewhere in here. And I think it took me like another like 10 minutes of running back and forth from a save point to like get the infection down and get my health back to like finally find it. And I was like, oh my God, I was like, that was awful. I hope I don't have to do more of this. And I will say one thing that's good about this game that's very forgiving is that after you get through that awful level, the final level is extremely short. It's like you basically start the final level, you do like 1 quick little thing, and then you go right to the end game boss.
Yeah, the end game boss was pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, it's
I think the bosses in general were pretty cool in this game.
I feel like we can spoil now about 14-year-old game or close to 14-year-old game. Like, yeah, the last boss is wait, so did you actually beat it or did you
No, I got too infuriated with key cards.
You dabbled a little bit in the old Let's Plays on YouTube.
Yeah, I was looking up the ending.
So that's too bad because you were like right there. You were so close, but I understand.
It's also bad because I think out of all the games that are on our list, the ones that you can beat, I've probably beaten 99% of them. That just goes to show you what this game is.
Yeah. So the final boss is basically if Mother Brain had consumed basically an entire planet, I guess for lack of a better term, and takes on multiple forms, and the first form is kind of a little bit more of like an ab. Oh no, the first form is like 3 mechanical eyes that you have to destroy with specific weapons. Then the second form is like kind of more like the textbook, like cliche Mother Brain type form. But then the virus, which has like become very, or the scourge, which has become very sentient at this point, goes into Genosis' head, and your final battle is with the scourge inside Genosa's own mind. And like it starts creating clones of Genosa. It was cool. I thought it was like a really good narrative step up to end the game.
It also looked like visually like the end of a Final Fantasy game.
I was actually thinking, is it Mother or Earthbound? Or is that the same thing?
Yeah. Earthbound is Mother 2, but yes.
Right, yes, there we go.
Yeah, similar. Yeah. So, I think we're at a good point where we can discuss where this game goes on our endless list, unless you have anything else to bring up.
No, I think it's a good time to rank it. I will, before we get into the ranking, I'll make one little pitch for the game, because I did actually enjoy this game. Not for the purposes of ranking, but for people who are interested in trying this game. People who are interested in trying this game and were curious about it like I was, like, it's not the greatest game on the planet, right? Like, you can tell from the background that we gave. It was made by a small studio who clearly didn't make a lot of games. And, you know, I think there's a lot of good ideas here. I think the infection gimmick is pretty good. Like, it kind of creates like an artificial tension. You're not going to get the tension from the enemies, because you can kind of steamroll the enemies, even with all the different variety types. But if you want something that feels like, almost like, I don't want to call it a running gun, but just something that you, like, when you fight the bosses or you clear like a crowded room and it's just like you're just firing nonstop, like, it feels like it's energy nonstop. You don't really hit like a lot of lulls. And I think if you can find this cheap, like, I think this is a cool game to try. You know, if you like the sci-fi aesthetic and totally don't mind it being an unabashed Metroid clone, then, you know, have at it. So that was my pitch, which was good because that bought me time to open up our endless list to have it in front of me.
I see. You're the anonymous raccoon on our Google Drive thing. Nice. Yeah, I don't think this game's bad. I don't think it's... we haven't done very many bad... Actually, I think my general level of what I can call bad has been shrunken down because I've played so many different types of games over the past 2 years. Sure. I don't think this game is necessarily bad. It can be really frustrating at times. I also just... Right. One thing I didn't touch on is that I find... People are going to think this is heresy, but I find the DS... to be not very ergonomic in my hands. It's like too small, so I just have trouble playing a lot of games on the DS. I have yet to find.
Did you?
I've played like maybe like 10 games on the DS, like fully through, and I have yet to find a game that I've like absolutely fallen in love with on the DS.
Now, is this the fat DS, or is this the like one of the later models?
I have a new 2DS XL, so the last actually model of the 3DS. It's the gotcha. Like the foldable new 2DS XL, the black and turquoise model. When it was like $150, I picked it up like 2 years ago.
Gotcha. I play this on my I play the GBA version on my fat OG DS. So.
Oh, nah. Nice.
Bottom screen, if you were wondering which screen, because I felt the bottom screen was a better fit, even though I don't think there's any difference. But either way.
Nice. Where do you think this game goes on our list? Again, you can check out our endless list on our Medium page. It's linked in the podcast description. This is our 88th entry, our first GBA/DS game. Which was an odd pick for Scourge Hive, but hey, here we are. It currently goes from Super Mario 64 all the way down to Jurassic Park Trespasser. And Chris, why don't you start us off with where you think it might go?
Yeah, so I'm looking at our list. You know, like you said, there's not a lot of bad games on this list until you get to like 86 and 87. Shaq Fu and Jurassic Park, Trespasser.
Those are really bad games. There's some mediocre games, mediocre to bad games, starting with like Pit Fighter. There's some like, you know, blasé games above that, like Monster in My Pocket.
Right. I mean,
it's up to you. I think it goes higher than those games. I particularly was looking more in the range of like between. Like L.A. Noire and maybe like Eternal Darkness. There's a couple games on this list that I felt very frustrated with when I was playing with them, and the same type of feeling I had when I was playing this game. Eternal Darkness is one of those. I think Where else? LA Noir was one of those. Contra Hardcore is one of those. Spider-Man 2, which is at 50, was one of those. But I think that game is better and bigger and more of a expanded out story and has more interesting gameplay ideas. But
you know, looking at the list and where I was actually going to put it, I realized there's a lot of other games on here that I've recommended that are kind of clumping up in the same area. So I don't know what that says about my tastes. But so
where do you think? But
my ceiling was going to be Portopia Serial Murder, which is at 72. Okay. That was my ceiling for this game because I think while I enjoy this game a lot, like Portopia is just a much more influential game, just a better experience overall.
Yeah,
you know, looking at some of the games below it, like some of these games I don't have a lot of experience with. Like I don't have a lot of experience with L.A. Noir, Zone of the Enders, but, you know, I look at Splinter Cell, which we just did it not too long ago, and Splinter Cell was just a fucking miserable experience, and I don't know, that's where I'm at. It being 73, to me, below, right below Portopia.
I think I had more fun playing L.A. Noir myself personally, but, like, if we're just going on me having fun playing games, I think this game goes above Thrasher, Skate and Destroy on the list. If you look at the complete package and the graphic design and the audio and, you know, they had some ideas in there. Just the gameplay, the core gameplay is really what holds this down as from going really much higher on this list. And it's sad because I opened up this game and I started playing it and I'm like, wow, this game looks and plays pretty good. It's just, you start to get into some of the mechanics around the weapons, some of the platforming, and you're like, oh, this is, and then like the whole key card situation. And it's like, oh, this game could be so much better. Could be so much better.
Sure, I kind of wish this. I kind of wish the studio stayed with this franchise because not giving too much away in the ending, it is definitely left open for a sequel. And
it's entitled Scourge: Hive, so I'm assuming they wanted to do a Scourge: something else at some point.
Perhaps, yes, or maybe just Scourge and your colon. But it's like I think as they gained more experience, I would think making more games like this, like maybe they really could have kind of polished up the rough edges. Instead, looks like they made some Kim Kardashian style games, but that's what brings in the bucks, right? Those mobile games. So, I think it's a good effort for a small studio that wasn't a big development team. It was pretty, I don't have the exact number, but it was a pretty small development team. So,
yeah. And also this Orbital Media was based out of Calgary, Canada, which you don't see a lot of studios coming out of Calgary. There's Edmonton is where BioWare is. But Calgary is not like a big hub. So it's interesting. I'm curious about what the tie is between Orbital Media and WayForward, because WayForward is the people who do Shantae. But they also, if you look at Jake Kaufman, he definitely worked at WayForward.
Or so he was from, we didn't touch on it, but what I was reading is that he had just left whatever like his first like full-time job was, and he was around this time, he was doing only like freelancing type work. And so this was like, this must have been like one of his earliest kind of staking out on his own, because he had left a company, and I forget which company, but he was doing like independent work at this point. And it's like when you look at his credits around this time, it looks like he's on all sorts of random stuff. So
yeah, I think he was freelance. There. Yeah, he did work at WayForward at one point, because that's probably where he met the people who made Shovel Knight, assuming.
Right.
Because all the people who made Shovel Knight there. And he also worked on Double Dragon Neon, which all those people worked on as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it's... and. Yeah, he's also, as I brought up Shantae earlier, he's on all the credits for all the Shantae games. Mm. he did all their music work, so. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. I'll just ask once. If you say no, I'll go with what you say. But I just feel like because we're comparing this to L.A. Noir, a Rockstar Games game against like a little studio that could, I almost kind of feel like it's got to get a little bump. Got to get a little bump. Yeah.
Let's put it at 73. I'm okay with that.
All right.
Cool. we have a new number 73, our 88th entry on our endless list. It is Scourge Hive, our first ever DS/GBA game. We have more portable games coming up in the works. We just picked out a game that I won't spoil. I think yesterday you picked out a game.
I did, yeah.
You've been thinking about it for a while, but you told me about it yesterday.
Well, I had decided on it a while ago, but I have purchased it from an international seller, and you may be surprised to hear that international purchases that you make on eBay aren't getting here in the most timely of manner. So
you know what's wild? So I recently purchased a Famicom Disk System from Japan, and it shipped here with like two games. And I bought it, I think, on like a Wednesday, and it came on a Tuesday. And I was like, holy fucking shit. Ooh. Yeah.
Boy, that is fast.
Think they upped the shipping because it was like $120 for everything. Mm. And it was the same seller sold me the games too.
Oh, okay. So that would make sense, because you probably got a little bit of a package deal there, huh?
Yeah, so that was nice. But yeah, I'm big into collecting the Namcot Famicom games with the clamshells, and those have taken like a month to 2 months. One game took I think 4 months to come here. I bought some dumb Namco Famicom game. Oh, it was Mappy Kids. That's what it was. It finally came a week ago. But yeah. We'll be back next week with another episode. Chris, thank you so much for leading this conversation this week.
Oh, anytime.
And hopefully we will be back next week with another episode where we will enter another game onto our endless list. Thank you so much for listening.